I'm Damien Carrick and you're listening to The Law Report on ABC Radio National and also on Radio Australia. For transcripts, audio on demand or downloadable audio, log on to our website at abc.net.au/rn/lawreport.
Excluding us from the democratic process while we are in prison, however short our stay might be, implies we have forfeited our right to political participation. I believe this serves only to further alienate us from society and ensures that the exiting prisoner feels no connection, commitment or loyalty to his or her community and may therefore not feel bound to respect its laws or social mores.
An extract from a letter sent by prisoner Vicky Roach to The Law Report's Anita Barrow back in 2007. Vicky was at the centre of the biggest constitutional case of that year, a challenge against the Howard government's attempt to remove the vote from all serving prisoners. On the surface, Vicky Roach seems like an unlikely plaintiff. Fostered at two, living on the streets from a young age, and in and out of detention and jail most of her adult and teenage life. Political participation was far from her world of addiction, petty crime and poverty. But in 2004, together with her violent and abusive boyfriend, she was involved in a robbery and a high-speed police chase that ended tragically. Her actions seriously injured a man in another car. For Vicky, this was a shocking wake-up call and the beginning of her rehabilitation. After pleading guilty, she began her long sentence. During her incarceration, she not only completed a university degree, but also a master's, and she began a PhD. It was also a time of political awakening, and this led to her involvement in the successful High Court case. Thanks to her action, 9,000 prisoners were able to vote in the 2008 federal election, but ironically not Vicky. The High Court concluded that while it was unconstitutional to disenfranchise all prisoners, it upheld long-standing legislation denying prisoners the vote if they're serving 3 years or more. Vicky Roach is now out of jail. This is her first interview. She tells Anita Barrow why the right to vote is so important.
Once upon a time we could all vote. All prisoners could vote. Then it was taken down to 5 years and John Howard brought it down from 5 years to 3 years to nothing, where no prisoner could vote.
And that was in 2006?
Yeah.
And you won the case, or partially at least?
Well, I didn't exactly argue it in the High Court, but, we won the case in the High Court. Went back to 3 years, which was the last legislation change.
You were arguing that denying the vote for prisoners, your case was arguing, contravened the Constitution.
That's right, because the Constitution says that the government must be chosen by the people. Now, the people, that was also part of the argument, who the people were. And the people is everybody, except if you've been convicted of treason, of course, if you're under 18, or if you're mentally not capable of voting. But otherwise, the vote should be, it was extended to everybody. But to disenfranchise prisoners, it didn't make sense. It meant that a convicted paedophile could get out the day before an election after serving 25 years and vote. And yet somebody who couldn't afford to pay their fines would be in prison for 2 weeks and wouldn't be able to vote. So if it comes down to a moral judgment as to whether somebody should vote or not, that didn't cut it. 9,000 people were being stripped of their right to vote, which they got back. And it was just such a cynical move to do that.
During this case, nobody could interview you.
No.
So
the prison wouldn't allow that.
So you ended up writing a letter.
That's
and
right.
And wrote a letter to the Law Report. And in your letter to the Law Report, you say, denying the vote for prisoners serves only to further alienate us from society.
That's it. It does. And although denying a person the right to vote maybe is symbolic type of exclusion, it's a very powerful one that says that you have no right to belong to this community or this society.
Although you could argue that the right to belong has been taken away from you because you've done something wrong against society. You've broken the social contract.
The penalty is your imprisonment. They don't say you're being imprisoned and you're not going to be able to vote as well.
Although the judges then did conclude in the end that a person who had committed a serious crime had lost their right to vote.
Yes, and they determine the seriousness of the crime by how long your sentence is, which again is not fair because sentencing is so disparate across different jurisdictions. So it's all very variable. There are so many variables to take into account, and it really doesn't do society justice.
John Howard, or in fact the minister responsible for this legislation in 2006, described it as you know, people like yourself in prison as undesirable.
Undesirable elements of society who are unlikely to vote anyway. And I know that may be the case. A lot of people in prison wouldn't vote, and not only because they didn't want to, because they're not politically aware, politically educated, or even literate. Which is a huge, and this is recognised as a huge problem.
As an Indigenous woman and a survivor of the Stolen Generation, I also believe the issue of voting rights is especially important to the Aboriginal community. If you consider that we make up 22% of Australia's prison population, while only 1% of the general population... And with those of us in prison...
You're now being described as the Eddie Mabo of electoral law.
Yeah.
How important was this case, do you think, for the Indigenous population in prison?
I believe, in principle, it is hugely important. It's just that our people now have to take advantage of that and rise to the occasion and actually make our voice count. We are only 2% of the population, but...
But you represent about 25% of prison population.
Of the prison population, yeah. And that's a huge number of our people. Yeah, so it needs to be a new political awareness for us, which I think is happening anyway. With Kevin Rudd's speech, the apology, there's always been elements of Indigenous community... Who have always been political and always will be political, but we all need to be. We all need to have a strong voice in Parliament.
But I'm still trying to understand why you, Vicky Roach, you were pretty disenfranchised pretty much all your life. You were taken away from your mother at two. You foster parents. There's a series of I mean, you were your basic classic prison fodder material.
Yeah.
I mean, just looking at one of your cases, 125 convictions or admissions of guilt.
Yeah. I don't look at it like that, 125 convictions or 125 pleas of guilty. I was just doing what I had to do at the time. Sometimes my life led me along paths where the choices I was given were sort of six to one, half a dozen of the other. And I don't know. I didn't set out to be a criminal.
And we're talking basically petty crimes here on the main, really.
Well, in a way you could call them survival crimes. I was living on the street when I was 13, 14, in Sydney, and in those days you couldn't get the dole or, you know, youth allowance or anything like that, so it was basically living on my wits, which wasn't bad in those days because it was like the 70s, you know, it was very, you know, peace, love and mung beans kind of era. But you still had to survive. You still had to get money somehow, and I had to come up with new and innovative ways of getting money for myself, which I did, not always terribly well. You know, I can remember going up to the Cross at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning to go around all the shops and, you know, nick a loaf of bread and a bottle of milk from the shop's deliveries. So I didn't always have money, but you had to... Everybody knows you need money to survive. And, of course, not being able to participate in the economic society, like I couldn't work, I couldn't get the dole, I couldn't do anything, I had to kind of go under the counter and do that sort of work. And that was okay, you know, that kept me alive. But it also got me a drug habit and all those kind of things.
And some bad men.
Oh, yes, some bad men. Yeah, we had several of those along the way. And I think in the beginning most of my convictions were possession and self-administration of drugs. They used to charge you once for admitting that you were a heroin user. And that was actually what I did my first prison sentence for when I was 17. I got 6 months jail for self-administration. It was pretty harsh in those days, but, yeah.
So most of the criminal acts that you did were associated with drug abuse?
Yeah, except this last one. That wasn't really associated with drug use. That was not just a big wake-up call for me. It was just so enormous. I used to have these nightmares that some huge, enormous, ominous thing was about to crush me. But that's how I felt about it. In my waking hours, it was just this huge, huge... You know, like when you're a little kid and you know you've done something wrong and not so much worried about getting caught for it, but it's just you know you've done this horrible thing and you... But it was so huge. It was like it was going to crush me because I didn't have any counselling or anything like that in there. I did try to talk to a psych in there once, but... He just said to me, it's normal. You're meant to feel guilty. And it is still a huge area in my life that I'm deeply ashamed of.
I mean, you can have criminal acts, but when it sort of comes to a person, other person being involved and harmed. But there were other factors involved too. A relationship with the person you were with.
Yeah, yeah. That was an abusive and violent relationship. And I no doubt would not have been in the position where I was driving that car had I not been in that relationship.
But I'm still trying to understand why you, Vicky Roach, took this path from this life of crime, of running away from home, of being a person who really hadn't been encouraged to participate politically or even in normal society. As you say yourself, you went underground.
Well, that's
What made you turn around and decide that this particular issue was really important, enough to mount a constitutional challenge?
Well, even though I was in prison, my studies and the things I was learning, the things I was reading, just made me think, well, I don't want to be on the fringes anymore. I want to belong to society. I want to be part of society. And then here I was being told that I wasn't, I didn't belong, I was excluded, and that I was an undesirable element. And, okay, I've been in prison and I have led a criminal life, but I believe I'm a good person. And I sincerely believe that if... there was a greater emphasis on education in prisons and making it more accessible to prisoners, you'd see a lot more success cases.
It's really interesting because really up until that point, to that last prison sentence in 2004, up until that point, it was only after that that you went to university, you did a degree, a master's and started a PhD, mm-hmm. all in prison.
Yeah.
It's suddenly this huge sort of turnaround, and then you also, within that, became a sort of political activist for voting rights. Why did it suddenly turn around for you? Because previous to that, I think there'd been psychology reports on you saying she wants to reform, but it's too hard.
Yeah. And it is hard. The judge in my hearing said that I had little prospect of rehabilitation. So I hope he's eating his hat right now.
A judge eating his hat, what a great image. Vicky Roach speaking there with Anita Barrow, the Law Report producer. Since her release from prison last year, Vicky has been working with Akuri Arts Organisation and she's also finishing her PhD. That's the Law Report for this week. Don't forget, if you'd like to sign up for podcasts, listen to the program online or download it onto your MP3 player, just log on to our website at abc.net.au/rn/lawreport.